Hey y'all, are you looking for Corolla? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore, don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic, super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening. The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently talked America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with co-hosts, doctor, attorney, and author, Mayor Eisenstein, and vaccine rights attorney, Alan Phillips, coming to you live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific times. Proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain time, and 10 a.m. Pacific time. We welcome your calls. That number is area code 646-478-0772. That's area code 646-478-0772. 0772 to call into the live show, either to just listen by phone or to share your comment or ask a question. And you can email us during the week. That's mayor, M-A-Y-E-R, at homefirst.com, mayor at homefirst.com, and attorney at vaccinerights.com, attorney at vaccinerights.com. This is July 14th, 2014. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, and with me, my wonderful co-host, Mayor Eisenstein. Mayor, I want to hit you with a phrase here. I don't think I brought this up previously. It's I'm not a mug collector, but I had to buy this mug. The phrase on the mug says, "Life begins at the end of your comfort zone."
Oh, I love it. Oh,
life begins at the end of your comfort zone.
Life begins,
life begins
at the end of your comfort zone.
I think people
let me tell
like
you something.
And
I got a long way for life because, you know, it's so funny because I don't know why, but for the longest time, I was never afraid of saying what I felt. Now, maybe that's not always the best thing in the world. And I think it partially comes because my father was an incredible, incredible man, not only a brilliant rabbi, and he didn't even practice the rabbinate. I mean, he just was a teacher like a rabbi is. And I don't remember my dad ever raising his voice to either me or my three brothers, ever. You know, when I think of what his life was like, having escaped from Hitler, from Poland through Russia to Japan to China, where I was born, and coming to America, and it was just an incredible. I mean, he never had a bitter word to say about anything, and so his comfort level had to be very high in a sense, so for me it was very easy. I never had to do any of those incredibly frightening aspects as such, and I've also been so blessed to have known Dr. Mendelsohn when I did in my life when I was a third year medical student, and having learned about the vaccine issue, which I could tell you, Alan, in 1969 when I met Dr. Mendelsohn, in the year or two that he was formulating the vaccine issue, I never thought that would be the seminal healthcare issue in the country. It never even remotely entered my mind. I'm sure it may have Dr. Mendelsohn, because he kept talking more and more about it in the early 70s. When I say seminal issue, it is the most devastating thing. Worrying about GMOs, worrying about cyclamates, worrying about aspartame are important, but they pale in comparison to the damage being done by the childhood and adult vaccine programs.
It's really fascinating for me, Mayor, to hear you put that into perspective like that and to share some of a little piece there of your own life and your own father. That's really appreciate you, because we can all learn from what we're hearing from you on this. For me, this idea of comfort zone, I think it comes down a lot to the idea of choice. It's not that, you know, we should never be comfortable, but a lot of people – I think maybe without really thinking about it one way or the other, spend a great deal of our time trying to get comfortable, not only in the present moment, you know, a job that you like, a house that is warm in the winter and cool in the summer or what have you, but comfort with respect to what is ultimately an uncontrollable future. So there's this enormous insurance industry, car insurance, health insurance, all these things to control as much as we can in the future. And I'm not saying these are good things or bad things, but if we always stay within our comfort zone, if we don't give ourselves at least the option of choosing from time to step outside of that zone, then we won't do some of the crazy things that we do, such as have a radio show where we pronounce and proclaim our objection to the corruption in the world. And, it, you know, is it naive for people to do that? You know, hard to say in any sort of absolute terms, although I would say at least at the moment, if that's the case, I proudly proclaim my naivete. But, you know, for the time being, I haven't gotten any death threats. We keep on going. But I just think I just want to put this out there for anyone listening to us on this point and thinking about it. You know, there have been some people who have made it clear to me that they're very much anti-vaccine, but they're not going to say anything to anybody about it anywhere except where they maybe have to get an exemption or whatever. They want to be as under the radar as possible. And I understand and respect that.
Sure.
No criticism or judgment here on people who take that position. In fact, you know, when I have clients who work for the pharmaceutical industry, for example, they particularly have to do that to protect their jobs, for example. But when we occasionally have people come on or ask people to come on and tell about their experience with a vaccine adverse event, you know, that's it takes a brave person to do that. And that
right.
is somebody who steps outside of their comfort zone when they do that and to do that, for example. So I don't with no judgment or criticism at all for people who make choices that are appropriate for them to stay in their comfort zone. For those who make a very conscious choice from time to time to step out of it in their effort and with the intention to make a difference and at some risk, we commend you, we thank you, we welcome you to call into our show and you know, share your experiences and thoughts and so forth. So along with others who may call in with questions or comments, of course. But just wanted to get your two cents on that thought, Mayor. And
oh,
as
I
always,
like it.
I ask...
You know what? I love young people, especially I love teenagers. And not that I don't love everybody, but sometimes they're so... upfront with what you see is what you get. And I had a young woman who called my daughter Jen and I this afternoon, and she's been with the practice, she said, since she's a baby, and she's now 19 years old, and she wants to become a phlebotomist. That's someone who's a specialist at drawing blood. And they told her that she needs multiple vaccines, and she wanted to know my opinion if there's any vaccine she should take. And I said, how many words do you want to answer? She said, Dr. Eisenstein, all you have to do is tell me if I should take it or not take it. She said, you shouldn't take it. Thank you. That's all I need to know. I'm not going to do it. It was so. She said, I've done enough research, you know, and I found it was so. And I told her, you got to go back and thank your parents, because none of her siblings are vaccinated. And her mother said that, you know, she's an adult now. She can make her own decision, you know. And I thought it was. It tells me we're winning. It may not be winning here or there, but at the end of the day, we're winning because, it's kind of like what President Lincoln said, you could fool some of the people some of the time, and you could fool all of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. And one of the headlines I'm remembering, because Al and I were talking a little bit before, and I kind of got frazzled by some work I had to do, nothing serious, that was the problem. I wanted to talk about, they're talking about now, of giving the Gardasil vaccine to newborns. I can't imagine why it would, and once again, this is a sexually transmitted disease. You know, it's to protect you against herpes, but the problem is, like Dr. King would point out, there's 10,000 strains, and it allegedly is, pick three strains that the vaccine allegedly works for. That's a separate issue, you know. But why would they do this to babies? I, for the life of me, I can't figure this out. Or the hepatitis B shot for newborns. It's almost like they want to see how far they could push our buttons. They want to see how much they can get outside of our comfort zone before we just start screaming all day long. You know, I just want to go back to how much can they push our buttons? I think what Alan said was really, really very good, you know, with regard to the whole vaccine issue and giving unwarranted vaccines to newborns and to children. Forget about, you can even justify their thinking on some of the vaccines, but to give sexually transmitted diseases vaccines to children makes no sense.
I was at the Childbirth and Postpartum Association conference this past weekend, a great bunch of gals, and this is the third time they've had me back since 2010. And I always talk with this particular group of women about the hepatitis B at birth and, of course, the ever-progressing issue about flu vaccines for healthcare workers. But, you know, one of the things I say when I talk about the hepatitis B vaccine is I just raised the question, you know, why are they giving this vaccine? I have yet to see any sexually promiscuous intravenous drug users at birth. And, you know, I said, if anybody out here, and there's, I don't know, a couple hundred people there in this conference, if anybody there knows, you know, a good reason for giving that, please tell me. And, of course, nobody ever comes up and says, here's the reason, because I don't think there is one. But what I do hear from people in this group when I get through talking is they go out of their way to come up to me and say, you know, thank you so much, really good presentation and that sort of thing. Not because I'm some kind of award-winning public speaker, but because the content and the information I'm talking about is something that they find affirming, reassuring. You know, yeah, it doesn't make sense to us either. And, of course, they're working in and around these kinds of issues all the time. So, but that sort of feedback says to me the same thing that you see and that you're hearing from the folks you interact with, that just sort of tells you that this issue is moving forward despite the insanity and whatever else you want to call it that's going on here, the seemingly insane rapid ongoing progression of the pro-vaccine agenda.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's in a sense miraculous that we're the Davids against the Goliaths, and it seems that the Davids are growing in strength. You know, which is kind of a spiritual type of way of looking at it.
Well, I think, you know, the agenda, pro-vaccine agenda, clearly is barreling forward, but at the same time, awareness is growing. So these are very interesting times, Mayor. It's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out over the next few months and years, because it's not much further that both sides can be making progress and there isn't some sort of head-on collision. So It's going to be very interesting. Well, Mayor, we did have one caller on the line before we asked for somebody else to please punch one to see if we were still airing live. And let's say we go to that caller and see.
Sounds great. Sounds great.
Okay. Now, I'm going to caller whose number ends in 79, who I believe is the one who has been on hold for several minutes waiting for us. And if I'm correct, please tell us your first name and what your question or comment is.
This is Devorah.
Hi, Devorah.
Hey, Devorah.
I'm calling because I had a very strange call with a doctor. I did not expect this. Basically, he called about something else for one of my children. And after that, he says, I saw this magazine. I don't know if you've heard about it. You could probably Google and get some comments people wrote about it. It's called Peach Magazine. Somebody put out parents educating about health decisions.
I'm very familiar with Peach Magazine.
If you saw it, and you know both,
yes.
And your phone number's in it, and
yes,
back there your books are mentioned. Well, my doctor says to me he just saw it today. So since then he's been looking at that package inserts, and I couldn't believe this because like I had once asked him just for package inserts because I told him I made a decision. I just want to be able to go over my parents if they ever ask me, you know, and show them that I did my research, and. You know, I was, like, so surprised that to get the – because I was one of these that I would never bring up with a doctor more than I have to. And I don't know. I'm wondering if it's having – if this is having an impact on other doctors, but I was very shocked that this is, you know, what came out of it.
Let me tell you something. That's very exciting. And it's kind of on the heels of what happened a few weeks ago when I got a referral from an obstetrician who said, if you don't want to vaccinate, call Dr. Eisenstein. You know, he can help you, which is one of the – I can't remember the same thing the last time an MD sent someone like that. And what's happening is we're dealing with medical doctors as very brilliant people, every one of them. I don't care what positions they have. You know, and I'm not patting myself on the back because I know how smart my colleagues are. And it's only a matter of time before all of a sudden someone says, stop, I'm going to stop for a second, let me take a look at it. And I think, that, you know, everything is looking in that direction because it's just so, it seems to be so unreal. For example, the idea of a doctor giving a pregnant woman a influenza vaccine where on the label it says contraindicated during pregnancy. And I agree. I think most doctors haven't read that. And all of a sudden they read it, they say, wait a minute, what does this all mean? Very exciting. Devorah, what you're bringing us is, you know, it's it may only be one person.
Yeah, but then somebody told me, well, there's two things that can happen. Either they're going to step back. Either they're going to say, well, look, I need the money, I can't do it, I'm not going to do anything, or they're going to step back, they're going to leave the practice, and they're going to find a different path.
I don't think doctors do it for the money. That's a misnomer in my mind. You know, doctors...
They still need to pay their bills. They still need to feed their family. It's not,
yeah,
you know, they're going to have
rarely,
really
yeah,
make some kind of plan.
Yeah, I know, but absolutely. And doctors' income has been precipitously dropping. And no one knows, really even appreciates the expense it is to run a medical practice. But I could tell you that doctors really haven't sat back and thought about it. And all of a sudden, here's a doctor who does. That's, in my mind, the biggest reason why they promoted an agenda. They don't really promote an agenda. They just, it's kind of like put in front of them, and they have, and they're on a train that's moving real fast, and now they've got to drop out. And they also aren't confrontational. Doctors are, they get angry, but they really don't handle abuse real well. And that's what's happening to doctors, unfortunately. Parents around the country are abusing them. And what does it mean to abuse to a doctor? You don't agree with what they say. To them, that's abuse, you know, because they're, all their life they've been told you are the best, you're the smartest, you know more than anybody else. And all of a sudden, someone tells them something, and if they find out that the person that told them is right, that's problematic. And but it's exciting. When you're, Alan, don't you feel the same way? This is very exciting. There's no such thing as small numbers when it comes to this.
Oh, it is. And anytime you see something like this with one doctor, it probably represents, you know, some unknown number of others where similar things happen. But I want to make two comments, Mayor. One is that I hear from time to time feedback from clients and others who will describe a situation. For example, they're in a hospital emergency room and they decide not to do the vaccines. And at some point, you know, one of the nurses there has an opportunity in a room to quietly make a comment where no one else can hear. And she sort of in a hushed voice will say, you know, I agree with you. I don't want to do it to the vaccines either, but I can't say anything about it here. And from time to time, I hear about doctors and nurses who will, in one way or another, let it be known in an informal, quiet way that they have some concerns. I suspect there are many healthcare professionals who have concerns about vaccines, and they just don't go out on a limb to risk any repercussions to their job, for example, to take any sort of public position about it. And, you know, it's sort of like we were saying earlier, I don't have any judgment about somebody doing that. In fact, I'm glad to know they're there, and I hope they find a way that they can take a stand at some point that will make a difference. But I think there's a lot more people who have concerns than those of us who are vocal about it, for one thing. The other point I want to say, Mayor, is I heard a story a few years ago where somebody was describing how before class in a medical school classroom, some years ago, maybe decades at this point, before the bell rings, you'd see students around the class with their textbook open, looking over and reviewing whatever it is they needed to be on top of for that day's lecture. And then in more recent years, you go into a medical school classroom, and there, before the bell rings, they're all reading their copy of the Wall Street Journal. And I'm not sure that I can agree with you that doctors don't do it for the money. Maybe, I mean, I'm looking at it from the outside, granted, but I'm a bit more cynical than that. And I don't think it's a black and white sort of issue. There's probably multiple agendas. I don't think there's very few people, I'm sure, who go into medical school or any other healthcare profession who don't have some aspect of wanting to be able to help people, you know, with health healthcare needs and so forth. But I feel like the cynical part of me anyway, that there's two reasons why people go to medical school, and one is because they could get in despite the competition, and the other is because they can make money when they get out. But maybe I'm wrong, and I would love to
be
wrong.
Let me say, I actually believe you're wrong. Having worked in both fields, law and medicine, in law, I almost see no one. You're a big exception, Alan. In law, you know, you never see a lawyer forgive a bill, say that you can't afford it, you know. You hear too often, and I've been involved with this, you know, where the lawyer goes in front of the judge and tells the judge, Mr. Green hasn't shown up. At first, I didn't know what they were talking about, and that means that the client hasn't paid them, you know. I've almost never seen a doctor throw someone out of the office because of money. They may do it over vaccines, but the problem is that's because they're uninformed. But if someone says, I want to vaccinate my child, they don't have any money, the doctor will take care of them. That's more often than not, you know. It's the philosophy, but I haven't seen too much in law that tells me that philosophy rules very much. But in a sense, that's good, because if somehow what DeVore said, we can get doctors to just Look at it. We're not telling you to agree. Look at it and see if there's something you see here that doesn't mesh with the way you're practicing medicine.
Well, I just think it's wonderful that there's doctors who, despite the training conditioning, the disincentive in their profession generally and maybe even specifically, that if they can look past that and see something for themselves, this is terrific feedback and terrific news.
No matter what, it doesn't change what we have to do. We have to just keep encouraging all the families to read, you know, make up your own minds, you know, and you have a right. I mean, you have an absolute right to do what you want to do. I suppose this is the new generation. This is the 21st century. I mean, that's, you know, you could be everything you want to be. Well, you may not be able to be that, but you surely can get yourself more informed and make a really better healthcare decisions. You know, before we go to break, I want to just give a little teaser. And that is, now I remember what I wanted to talk about, and I'm hoping I can find it here in some of the papers. I've got so many things open. And I talked about this a little bit more, and I've been actually working on this. And that is, it was a paper that was in the British Medical Journal a few weeks ago, Delayed Antibiotic Prescribing Strategies for Respiratory Tract Infection in Primary Care. And what essentially they found was delaying treatment for bacterial infections, ear infections, throat infections, delaying did not have any effect on outcome as far as worsening outcome, and more than 40% of the people never took the antibiotics in the first place, and at the results. And this is very important because I believe that vaccines can be thrown into the same category and it'll be exactly the same thing. Delaying anything doesn't seem to make any difference in medicine. That's what they'd have to prove to me in vaccineology, that giving these 2-month-old and 4-month-old vaccines actually improves the health of the children. Otherwise, I don't think there's anyone on this planet who would argue that if you can avoid doing something, any type of procedure on a 2-month-old, you delay it. Be it surgery, be it drugs, why should vaccines be any different? Yet here we have the most vulnerable aspect of our humanity, a 2-month-old baby or a 1-day-old baby, being given vaccines, which most probably many of them could be delayed, you know. And so I'm not even taking a position right now that the vaccines are dangerous or no good, but surely no one could argue that we should give it to newborn babies.
Well, it seems to me we can delay the hepatitis B for, even if they are perfectly safe and effective, you can delay that for a number of years. Given the predominant risk group. But I believe I remember hearing at some point in the earlier days of the hepatitis B for newborns that they were saying, well, the reason to get them then is because that's when they're in the hospital and you can get them, and it's really hard to track down and get adolescents into the doctor's office to get the vaccine. I'm not sure, even if that's true, not sure it's a compelling reason for vaccinating newborns, but that was at least one of the arguments that I've heard in the past.
Yeah, no, I want to read the conclusion from the article here so people can ponder on it a little bit. Strategies of no prescription or delayed antibiotic prescription result in fewer than 40% of patients using antibiotics and are associated with less strong beliefs in antibiotics and similar symptomatic outcomes to immediate prescription. If clear advice is given to patients, there's probably little to know to choose between different strategies of delaying prescriptions. How phenomenal is that? I mean, it just feeds. I thought I wrote that. It was just so incredible. but it should increase comfort measures, because it's not only vaccines, it's antibiotics, it's antivirals, and all this stuff has to be questioned. But let's go to the big granddaddy of them all, antibiotics, which now everyone in the academia is agreeing is way overprescribed.
Well, thank God we're getting agreement on that. Maybe we can move on to some agreement with vaccines, if that's not too big of a leap from one to the other.
Yeah.
So we're going to go to break here. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Mayor Eisenstein and Attorney Alan Phillips, and we will be back for the second half of the show in just a couple of minutes, so stay with us.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening. The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Survival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WEBSEED.com.
We are back live with the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips. Mayor, there's an article in the news just in the last few days where research is now proposing that we combine the two different polio vaccines, the injected and the oral, because you get actually better protection by doing that. It took them 50 years to resolve this fight between should you get the oral or the injected polio vaccine. They've decided to strike a truce and have a compromise and say, we'll just recommend everybody get both of them. So here's the rationale. Because IPV, the injected polio vaccine, is injected into the arm rather than taken orally, it's been assumed that it doesn't provide much protection in the gut and so would be less effective at preventing fecal transmission than the oral polio vaccine. But this research team, which looked at 450 children from a densely populated urban area in India, found that where they already had a level of immunity due to the oral polio vaccine, the injected vaccine actually boosted the gut immunity. So now they're coming away saying, hey, maybe we can finally put an end to polio, which they've been, you know, trying to do and claim from vaccines for forever, it seems, and we'll just give them both. Of course, all that preliminary sarcastic stuff was mine, but the last few comments there were straight from the article. I've already gotten your initial reaction there. Anything else you want to add to that, or was that sort of sum it up?
Oh, boy, it sums it up. I mean, if one is good, two is better. You know, but I something just came this second. It came into my inbox, which I've got to mention. Helpouts is a new program by Google to be able to post articles on helpouts. And so I signed up for it a few weeks ago. Just kind of, you know, said I'd be happy to post articles and lectures. And so I just got, "Hi, Dr. Mayer. Thank you for submitting a help out listing. We're glad to see that you're interested in our new product. Though we aren't currently accepting additional listing related to vaccination information, we plan on expanding in the near future. We'll notify you if we expand, and we'll make your listing vaccine choice and awareness available to our users then." Now, you can take it two ways. You know, there's so many people posting on vaccines, or they don't want to even touch the subject.
Yeah, and it's sort of interesting. You know, a lot of people have that hands-off relationship to the issue, and it's very understandable. And, you know, we, of course, have to be respectful of that and work around it the best we can. But ultimately, the issue doesn't move forward if we don't put it out there. You know, and I guess I'm sort of going back to the earlier discussion about people who choose to be silent on the issue for any of a number of different reasons, but usually one form or another of self-protection. And sometimes that's wise, depending on the circumstances. But ultimately, there has to be a stepping out point. You know, Mayor, for years, I've been in looking into this issue for over 20 years now. What's that, maybe half as long as you almost. But in any case, it's a considerable amount of time. And for the larger part of 20 years, when people ask me what I do, well, say the last given that I've been an attorney, people ask me what I do, I say, well, you know, I'm an attorney, and I would maybe say something somewhat obscure, or I used to mention my general practice, which I don't do anymore, but I used to have a general practice in addition to the vaccine exemption and waiver work, or I would say, oh, I do First Amendment work, or something not being direct. And I have become more bold or maybe more naive or some mixture of the two, but in more recent months and years, I've gotten to where I'm just a little more direct answer. And maybe I've been lucky, but most of the time I get either neutral or very positive feedback from people when I tell them what I do. You know, the vaccine rights exemption and waiver attorney. And every once in a while, I still run across someone who's is why would somebody not want to vaccinate or some equivalent sort of thing. But far more often than I would expect, I get positive feedback. So I take that as sort of a message that consistent with what you've been saying recently and again this evening, that things are moving forward despite appearances to the contrary at times. And I just, you know, keep on keeping on. But I encourage folks, of course, to, you know, make a decision that's, you know, wise for you. And that decision is not the same for everybody. But when you can speak out and when you can pull together the whatever personal resources you need to find within yourself to do that, you know, at some point we have to do that because the issue doesn't move forward by us hiding it. So, you know, let's look for each of us for the time and place that's appropriate for us to step out and then be brave enough when it's right, be brave enough to do it.
Beautifully said, Alan. You know, but the whole thing's exciting, you know, and I think that we also have to, people have to know when they end up in a situation which has nothing to do with vaccines, be it an emergency room, an urgent care center, a new doctor's office, they don't have to be forthcoming and tell them everything or to try to convince them that vaccines are dangerous and the worst thing in the world. They're there usually for some other reason. And you want to, as best as can be, just kind of gently not open up the issue. You don't want to open up cans of worms when you don't have to.
Well, there are good places to do it and bad places to do it. You know, as I tell people and we've talked about before, you know, when you're dealing with a religious exemption, that's not a good time to bring up your concerns about vaccine safety and effectiveness issues, for example, because then that can actually undermine your religious exemption if you're mixing the two in a context where you're trying to, in writing or in an interview situation, justify or explain your religious beliefs. But, you know, if you have the opportunity or choose to create the opportunity, schedule an appointment with a state representative, for example, that's the place to pull out all your research and say, look, here's what's really going on with vaccines. Here are the real concerns. This is why we need laws that give us more freedom of choice. So we have to be careful to discern when and where is the proper time. When is it going to be effective? I used to spend many, many hours arguing with people on the internet about vaccines, and I always came away emotionally battered and exhausted and never really felt like it mattered or made much of a difference. And maybe it did, and I just didn't get the feedback. But I decided that for me, that's not a productive use of my time. That's not to say that there aren't times and places for me or others to do that when it can be productive. But there are places where what we have to say can be said freely and openly, where those who choose to hear it can hear it, where those who want to see this side of the issue, even if they're also, and hopefully everyone all ultimately is, also looking at the other side or all sides, you know, you have to do that to make an informed decision. So, you know, see who's most convincing to you or what side or what position, you know, works for you. But then, of course, also check and see what your legal rights are, because a lot of times people decide to do something that turns out not necessarily to be one of their legal options. Separate.
Exactly.
Separate
question. I think that's, right? The whole thing is kind of very, very interesting and very exciting. And I think that we still have tremendous problems in Illinois, and mainly here in Chicago and the Chicagoland area. We have very little problem with preschools, grammar schools, and high schools. Even most colleges are not a problem. But boy, as we've talked about, in the nursing schools, the medical schools, hospitals, this has become a real, real issue as we're mixing politics with medicine. As Dr. Sherry Tempany pointed out so well a few months ago, that hospitals will lose 2% of their reimbursement if less than 95% or so of their employees didn't get a flu shot. I find it so unacceptable to do something like that after you've pointed out all the literature as such showing that the questionable of the flu vaccine. But I think this is, if you ask me, I've been thinking about this now for a long time. Could this be possibly a way of keeping the most dedicated, motivated, strongest thinkers out of the healthcare business?
I think it's necessarily screening some of those people out, but I think I suspect from their point of view, it's more about indoctrinating those who are coming in as they're coming in, so that they will just fall in line then with that same procedure throughout the rest of their career, and trying to weed out any dissenters so that they can claim very high percentage rates. This is a really difficult issue in my practice as well, because, Mayor, I have found clear legal support in federal civil rights law for people in that situation to refuse vaccines on religious grounds. And I actually have support from an attorney at the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is the federal agency that enforces the federal civil rights anti-discrimination laws. And yet some of these clients, more understandably, because this is an area that nobody's familiar with. You're talking about law that's written in terms of employers and employees, and students aren't employees in the conventional sense of the word. And so it's confusing, understandably, for attorneys, the school attorneys and hospital attorneys, because it's just not something that has come up for them before. What I have not seen from a hospital attorney, from a school attorney, from anyone in the EEOC in terms of the local district offices that will handle the complaints, any explanation as to why my legal arguments, they feel that they're wrong, and any counter to my legal arguments. And yet people in all of these situations are still on many occasions rejecting my arguments, my client's position. And I had one of my clients who in this arena who had gone, no, actually this was a nurse who was an employee, but who went to an EEOC ruling because the hospital rejected her. And it seemed like a real clear cut case to me. So she went on to the EEOC. And she found out that the EEOC person had formerly been in some sort of healthcare position that really suggested a potential conflict of interest. And that's the most direct evidence I had of an EEOC conflict. But when I'm seeing rejection of my arguments, and I'm not always right, I'm not saying that I'm necessarily right, but I have what I consider to be a compelling legal argument. Nobody presents a counter argument, and nobody presents an explanation as here's why we think your argument is flawed, or why this argument, contrary argument is superior legal argument. They just seem to be, as far as I can tell, just randomly rejecting these, which really screams politics to me. And it's so frustrating to feel that you're on the right side of the law, still getting the short end of the stick.
Yeah, that's really frightening what you're saying. And you know, it's kind of like the what I heard too often in law, don't bother me with the facts. Just don't bother me with the facts. You know,
right.
And I would appreciate that also, that if you believe there's a reason for giving a one-day-old baby a hepatitis B shot, tell me. Just tell me. You know, and I mentioned this, and I've had multiple families who said when they've questioned, and they didn't question because they thought the vaccine was dangerous. They just wanted to know why. The answer has uniformly been because that's the way we do it.
And it's disturbing that there are people who can live with that. You know, that's the best answer they have. And they're not saying, you're right, it doesn't make sense. I'll ask and see if I can get more information for you. Or they know it doesn't make sense, but they don't dare speak up because they feel their job's at risk if they make waves. I mean, I'm obviously just guessing here, but you know, what is it that's really going on? What is it that would inspire someone to say that kind of an answer and try to close it, the issue? Because that's how it's done, end of story. I mean, this is America. You know, aren't we supposed to be able to speak our mind, to explore opinion, to have different opinions and ideas, and it be okay to do that? You know, here in the melting pot where supposedly all religions are respected equally under the law, for example, and shouldn't all ideas, short of any one that is clearly, you know, severely problematic, you know, in the sense that it's, you know, psychotic or unhealthy mentally or suggesting of, you know, harming people or whatever. But within reasonable bounds, shouldn't all ideas, however different, be allowed to be on the table? And it just seems so anti-American that to get that kind of an answer, and for everybody, for someone to feel like that's the best answer they can get.
You know, in the 70s, so let's go back to this, in the 60s, when I was in college, the liberal thinking was, and I was a staunch liberal in the 60s, there should be no illegal search and seizure. There should be no government involvement in our lives. That was the liberal thinking, you know. Less government is better. All of a sudden, 50 years later, it switched around just the opposite. It's almost as if, you know, I find it just, I can't get over it. I mean, well, just when you think things are getting better, I got to read you a letter I just got literally a few minutes ago, another letter. Dear Dr. Eisenstein, my friend gets a letter from her doctor practicing in the UK, and at eight weeks, she refused a flu jab being pregnant. Now at 33 weeks, the letter states between 28 and 38 weeks of pregnancy, with the Department of Health, a recommendation for all mothers to be vaccinated with whooping cough, as pregnant women, whooping cough, tetanus, diphtheria, and polio. My God, what are they doing? I mean, you said it. The flu vaccine was just the opening of the floodgates to just vaccinate. Are they trying to kill unborn babies? I mean, every one of these is contraindicated during pregnancy.
You know, Mayor, we had a brief discussion about this before we started the show this evening, and it's a, for me, it's a very sensitive issue because it's so controversial, and I keep thinking that we can stay away. I mean, I see multiple levels with a vaccine agenda, and I tend to stay, to not go any farther than what I think of as a huge one, but still a surface one, which is the money, that there's billions of dollar industry. It's growing at 10 and 12% a year internationally. You know, here in the U.S., there's no liability. So who wouldn't want to be a part of that if you're only looking at it from, you know, a dollars and cents point of view? But and I used to, I've been looking at the issue for 20 years, and for most of those years, anytime somebody would mention population control or any aspect of that, I would realize if I gave it any attention at all and say, there's, you know, people everywhere. I keep seeing more and more information that points back in that. And this is a really difficult concept for many people to even consider, let alone look at seriously and objectively and weigh evidence and so forth. But, you know, for example, we had the National Coalition of Women pointed out statistics that showed something like a 4,250% increase in fetal death associated with the swine flu vaccine. You remember during the pandemic in 2009-10, they were pushing that on pregnant women. And, you know, anybody who knows what you know, you know, caring for pregnant women, just have to scratch and say, where in the world is this coming from? Because the last thing you do with a pregnant woman is anything. You don't have to. So that you minimize any risk to that developing fetus. And that 4,250% increase was compared to fetal deaths associated with the seasonal flu vaccine in the previous year. That was the increase. And combining that with the fact that they were pushing it on pregnant women, which I'm sure factors into the increase, but nonetheless, you can't help but wonder, was this just some horrible, tragic mistake? Or was somebody really trying to, you know, test out this vaccine's ability to control birth? I'm not going to make the draw conclusion. Everyone should draw their own conclusion on something as controversial as what I'm proposing here. But this is just one of multiple pieces of information that I've seen about this. There are documented instances of vaccines being used in third world countries in, you know, local arenas, but without informing the local people, where there were ingredients in the vaccines that were known to affect pregnancy. And there was just this past March, Mayor, in Africa, forget which exact country it is, but I've got an article on my about this in the list of articles on my secondary website, thepandemicresponseproject.com, news page there. Catholic Church went public saying, we think that the local tetanus vaccine campaign is a fertility control. They are pushing, we're pushing this tetanus vaccine on women of childbearing age, but not on men and boys. And this is something that's a repeat of a similar event that has gone on in world countries from the 1990s, I think, mostly, the ones that I'm aware of anyway. And you just got to ask, what would be the point in pushing a tetanus vaccine on women of childbearing age, but not on men and boys, who in many cultures are the ones more likely to be encountering a situation where they need that protection in the first place? So, you know, it's hard to draw a hard conclusion, but it's hard not to be highly suspicious when you hear about these kinds of things going on. And I would be among the first to agree, even if there are many other people who would not, that world population is a legitimate concern, that members of the human species on planet Earth should collectively be concerned about. We can't hold a growing, an indefinitely growing population. Now, people will disagree sometimes wildly or radically about what kind of population the Earth can sustain, but whatever the true answer is for that, there is a limit at some point. So population control is an issue that we should be concerned about and dealing with, but I take great exception to anyone deciding on behalf of the rest of us how they're going to deal with that and imposing that solution on us without our knowledge and consent. Human beings are resourceful. You put something out on the table and get enough people involved, and we'll come up with some answers. And maybe there will be a lot of proposals, and they'll have to be tested and so forth. But We are so much better than having to have something imposed on us without our knowledge and consent, especially something as egregious as causing infertility or even worse, fetal deaths. And so it's just the implications here are nothing short of horrific. And we should be very concerned about the possibilities here and looking for answers and demanding answers and more information on this.
Yeah, let me tell you, I tend to agree with you. I mean, it's once again the someone else making the decision for us without us having any input. No taxation without representation, and that's I think what's going on. And I don't know, it's very very, very tough, you know. And but I could tell you, getting back straight to the vaccine issue, it's been so encouraging in my mind. And even though we're up against formidable foes, The numbers are just growing like crazy. And my feeling is they're going to buckle. That's absolutely my feeling. I never thought this would be anything like this. But because look what's going on in Great Britain. And what's so even stranger there, the government pays for the vaccines outright. It's not like in this country where many people still have to pay for the vaccines or pay with high premiums for insurance. It's not like that in England. So you wonder what the agendas there are. Have the pharmaceutical industries so infiltrated the government there that they're just pushing a stronger agenda and a stronger agenda?
Well, again, Mayor, I think there can be and may be, different agendas, maybe multiple agendas involved, and it could be something different for each vaccine or each campaign or even each country and so forth. So, but we need to be asking the questions, because that's what opens the door for us to explore further and find the answers. Here's another piece here, and just to let folks know, we're going to go a couple of minutes over time tonight because of the technical difficulties earlier in the show. Mayor, here's an article. It might provide another piece to all of this. From Mercola.com, the title of the article is What the Latest Anthrax Blunder Can Teach Us. But I actually saw word of this in mainstream news recently, which surprised me. A quick summary of the Mercola article that between June 6th and June 13th, as many as 84 scientists and staff members at a U.S. CDC biolab were exposed to the live anthrax vaccine. Anthrax, not vaccine, the live anthrax. I guess that's a bacterium, isn't it?
Yes.
Anyway, there was a mishandling of samples. The sample was supposed to have been inactivated prior to a lower biosecurity facility, transfer to a lower biosecurity facility, but for a variety of reasons, quote unquote, it was not sample was not dead on arrival as it was apparently supposed to be. And the same article mentions that in 2004, a lab in Maryland accidentally sent live anthrax to a California children's hospital. There were apparently, a number of problems at these high security facilities and a number of incidences over the last several years in different parts of the country and parts of the world where things like this have gone on. And this, of course, is causing great concern to people in and out of the CDC. You know, it's the greater threat here regarding infectious disease that somebody's going to screw up and let something out of a lab, or is it, what happens out in the wild? where's the greater concern here?
Great.
We can't calculate that.
But Ellen, I think also that 17 of the scientists at the CDC lab refused to take the anthrax vaccine.
That's pretty telling, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it? And I'm going to try to find a reference to that, but I thought that was just, pretty telling.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting when the people who are working on it don't want to have anything to do with it. It sort of speaks volumes right there. But anyway, the full article at Mercola.com, What the Latest Anthrax Blunder Can Teach Us, fascinating article, has mentioned several different instances, including an incident back in, I think it was 2009, where problematic contaminated flu vaccines were sent to labs around Europe, and it was only by chance that some doctors in the Czech Republic tested it on some ferrets, and all the ferrets died, and that's what caused them to test the sample, and see that it actually contained some live bird flu virus that was not supposed to be in there. And in that particular instance, they use what's called a bio-level safety safety protocol that is a very strict protocol. And the medical people I've talked to about this, Sherry Tenpenny being one of them, say that's not something where one psychotic member of the group who has a key can go in at night and dump a little vial of bird flu virus into the vat and then, I've poisoned it all. It's something that would take a group of people knowing about it for it to be able to happen. You have been listening to the No Rights Hour with Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips, here every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. time, rebroadcast proudly at naturalnewsradio.com on Wednesday afternoon, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific time. Folks, thanks for being with us this evening. We look forward to seeing you again next week.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no